Here are some other announcements. July 4th, this coming Thursday, July 4th, there will be a special arati at 6 p.m., followed immediately by readings and reflections on Vivekananda and the freedom of the soul. I'll offer a brief talk on the Swami. This will be followed by songs and short readings by the congregation, no more than 5 minutes each, please. Then we'll share a potluck supper with fireworks, poppers, and sparklers after dark. So we'll probably have to wait a little bit for the gloaming after our dinner, but I'm sure we can spend the time usefully. As you've heard, if you've been coming regularly, we will have a weekend retreat on the 20th and 21st of July. Swami Chandrasekhar Nandaji, head of the Portland, Oregon Vedanta Society, will visit with us on that Saturday and Sunday and offer his wisdom on karma yoga. And some of you have heard that Swami Yogatmanandaji recently called to let us know he will come for his annual visit right at the end of November, November 30th, December 1st. From everyone here, I think pretty much everyone knows Swami Yogatmananda, so I won't say a lot about him, other than he is the head of the Providence, Rhode Island Center, and a very senior Swami in the order at this point. Before I go on with the talk, could someone run in and get me a glass of water? I just am a little choked up. It's been a stressful week. I will continue with the announcements. With regard to the bookshop, cash will be accepted for book purchases only on Sundays and on Tuesday and Wednesday evenings before and after the class. All other times, please bring a check to buy books. We don't want any more cash to go missing from the cash box. There may be an exception to our being closed in August. I think Swami Ishtananda may come to see us in August. I'm going to be in touch with him. He sent me an email, and I'll be in touch with him. That would be reason enough to have an activity in August. Otherwise, there'll only be evening arati in August. And that'll be our routine each summer. Thank you, dear. Is there anything that I should have announced that I failed to announce? Anything? All right. We'll open with our beautiful chant, this translation by Swami Yogeshananda Ji of an ancient prayer. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahano Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. May the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father, May the divine being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Well, I was going to sing you a Beatles song this morning, but with the voice the way it is, as I said, it's been a stressful week and it's left its mark on this old spacesuit. So we'll go without the song. Yeah, we'll try another time. As you know, June has been a month for the study of Bhakti Yoga. A Bhakti Yogi, Bhakta, establishes a devotional relationship with God through study, prayer, ritual, and worship. As a Bhakta, you practice giving every action, thought, emotion, perception, and tendency a Godward turn. All your energies and attributes, both positive and negative, are offered to the Divine Presence. Your prayer is for self-surrender and ultimately union with your beloved. This is from Vivekananda. He alone is worshiping God who serves all beings. The living God is within you. The living God is within you. Let all our passions and emotions go up unto him. They are meant for him, for if they miss their mark and go lower, they become vile. And when they go straight to the mark, to the Lord, even the lowest of them becomes transfigured. All the energies of the human body, all the energies of the human body and mind, however they express themselves, have the Lord as their one goal. This is from the Complete Works, Volume 3, and if you need to know the pages, it'll be posted online. This is from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. A visitor asked, "The English people always exhort us to be active. Isn't action the aim of life then?" Sri Ramakrishna, "The aim of life is the attainment of God. Work is only a preliminary step. It can never be the end. Even unselfish work is only a means. It is not the end." So we see here a profiling both by Vivekananda and Sri Ramakrishna of bhakti and a bit of thought about karma. Work is only a preliminary step. It can never be the end. Even unselfish work is only a means. It is not the end. So because this is the last day of the month, the last day that we'll be studying bhakti, and next week we'll start the study of karma yoga, the title of today's talk is Your Bhakti Karma Cocktail. A close friend of this center takes a daily cocktail of drugs to treat his Parkinson's disease. Cocktail has become a common term for a prescription of two or more medicines. We're going to give the word a Godward turn. We're going to give this idea of cocktail a Godward turn. Sri Ramakrishna once said to some visitors, "Go and enjoy the world. When you are sick of it, come back to me. I have the cure." As we read elsewhere in the Gospel, Ramakrishna's prescription for his cure often was a cocktail of bhakti and karma. This morning we'll explore the connection between the deep reverence that comes from the regular practice of bhakti yoga and the abandonment of self-centeredness that arises from karma yoga. This deep reverence, Sri Ramakrishna will explain why it arises. And it is a fact, if you practice bhakti yoga, a deep reverence for the universe, for the world in which we live, other people, and yourself will arise. Deep reverence for yourself. When Sri Ramakrishna was serving as the priest for the temple dedicated to Mother Kali at Dakshineshwar, he scandalized the temple administrators and the other priests by eating the food that was to be offered to the mother and putting a flower on his own head and sitting for meditation with the flower on his own head. This was an exemplification, a concrete example of Sri Ramakrishna saying the divine is within and having such deep reverence for it that he had no problem whatsoever eating the food that was to be offered to the divine because the divine was within and worshiping his own being. So this deep reverence comes from the practice of bhakti yoga and the abandonment of self-centeredness, of selfishness, arises from karma yoga. And we'll hear why from both Sri Krishna and from Sri Ramakrishna. What is the essence of karma yoga? Karma means action. In chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says, "Perform every action with your heart fixed on the Supreme Lord. Seek refuge in the knowledge of Brahman." Perform every action with your heart fixed on the Supreme Lord. Seek refuge in the knowledge of Brahman. Yet how can we fix our hearts on the Supreme Lord that we do not know? We can't, of course. Therefore, Ramakrishna tells us to practice bhakti along with karma. What does he mean by bhakti yoga? The master said, "If a man repeats the name of God, his body, mind, and everything become pure. Why should one talk only about sin and hell and such things? Say but once, O Lord, I have undoubtedly done wicked things, but I won't repeat them, and have faith in his name." If a man repeats the name of law, if a man repeats the name of God, his body, mind, and everything become pure. This is what Sri Ramakrishna means by bhakti yoga, the essence of it. So how do we arrive at the faith that he mentions? Have faith in his name. How do we arrive at this faith, which is the fruit of reverence and love for the Lord? We ask for it. We ask. Jesus said it, Chaitanya said it, Sri Ramakrishna said it, Krishna said it. Ask. We ask to be freed from the imprisonment of duality and immersed in the non-dual state of pure love for the Divine Presence. The Master has a special prayer Many of you as devotees have memorized this prayer, I believe. Mother Kali is Sri Ramakrishna's ideal conception of the divine presence. And so Sri Ramakrishna said, "To my divine mother, I prayed only for pure love. I offered flowers at her feet and prayed to her, 'Mother, here is thy virtue. Now listen to the duality and then the non-duality. Mother, here is thy virtue, here is thy vice. Take them both and grant me only pure love for thee. Here is thy knowledge, here is thy ignorance. Take them both and grant me only pure love for thee. Here is thy purity, here is thy impurity. Take them both, Mother, and grant me only pure love for thee. Here is thy righteousness, here is thy unrighteousness. Take them both, Mother, and grant me only pure love for thee.'" Sri Ramakrishna said, "Pure love, pure mind, pure consciousness, Brahman, all one and the same. Pure love, pure mind, pure consciousness, Brahman, all one and the same. Water still, the unmanifest Brahman, water in waves, the manifest Brahman, the Saguna Brahman, the Brahman with attributes, one and the same. Pure love, pure mind, pure consciousness, Brahman, all one and the same. Take them, take the both, take all of their duality, Mother, and grant me only pure love for thee." The only thing that he could not say this about, he listed all these things. The only one that he could not say is, "Take thy truth, take thy untruth." Because truth is also Brahman. Now, as we know, Bhagavad Gita, we know it from many students of Bhagavad Gita, Mahatma Gandhi said, he had it with him always. He referred to it daily, sometimes more than once, for inspiration, for guidance. The Gita, 700 verses, contains all spiritual knowledge. In condensed form, it contains all spiritual knowledge. It was one of two books that Swami Vivekananda took with him as he wandered the length and breadth of India after he had taken sannyas. And he left the Baranagore Monastery and began to travel. This was before he came to the West to teach. He went all the way to the North, all the way to the South, all the way to the West, all the way to the East, visiting all parts of India, the cities, the villages, the Maharajas, and the most common but exalted, in his view, exalted laborers. He took two books with him. One was Thomas A. Kempis's The Imitation of Christ, and the second was Bhagavad Gita. So this book contains the essence of bhakti and of karma. I've selected some passages from chapter 7, titled in Swami Prabhavananda's translation, "Knowledge and Experience." And we'll talk about each of these passages in turn, how they are the ingredients of your bhakti karma cocktail. As we know, Sri Krishna, on the battlefield of life and of Kurukshetra, is explaining to his disciple Arjuna how to be a genuine and successful spiritual aspirant. Arjuna is every person. Arjuna is a stand-in for each of us. So Sri Krishna is speaking to each of us as he speaks these words. There are no interruptions or interpolations by Arjuna here. This is just Sri Krishna talking about the essence of bhakti and karma. Sri Krishna, devote your whole mind to me and practice yoga. In this context, by practice yoga, he means meditation. Devote your whole mind to me and practice yoga. Take me for your only refuge. I will tell you how by doing this, you can know me in my total reality without any shadow of doubt. Now notice again this immense promise by Krishna. Devote your whole mind to me and practice meditation. Take me for your only refuge. Swami Prabhavananda said, I know you do not like to hear it, but as I've told you many times, the only one who is truly your own is the Lord. And this is what Sri Krishna is saying to us by indirection. I am your only refuge. I am your only true refuge. I am the one who is your own. Take me for your refuge. And then the promise. I will tell you how by doing this, you can know me in my total reality without any shadow of doubt. I will give you all this knowledge and direct spiritual experience besides. When a man has that, nothing else in the world remains to be known. And by the world, he means the universe itself. You now know that by which all else is known. I will give you all this knowledge and direct spiritual experience besides. When a man has that, nothing else in this world remains to be known. And then, as he often does, Sri Krishna remarks on how rare it is that anyone asks him to fulfill this promise. He goes on to say, yet who cares to seek for that perfect freedom? Who cares to seek for that perfect freedom? One man perhaps in many thousands. Then tell me, how many of those who seek freedom shall know my total truth? Perhaps one only. So out of thousands, one will seek. Out of thousands, who will seek, one will find. This can be a daunting thought. Oh my goodness. How could that possibly be me? And my question to you is, why not you? Why not you? Krishna's instructions are clear. The Swamis, all of them who come here in one way or another, reassure us and tell us that if we follow these instructions, the results are assured. So why not you? There are millions of people, literally millions of people, within a 30-minute drive in any direction from here. Many of them are in some place similar to this on this Sunday morning. In one way or another, they are seeking. And as Sri Krishna says in chapter 5, if they are sincere in following the directions that they're given by their teachers, even if they're not according to the Vedas, even if they're not according to the scriptures of India, he says, and he's very explicit, I will get behind that person's practice and make it a reality for them. But how few are sincere and regular in their practice. So that's what he's saying. Be that one. There's no reason why it should not be you that is that one. And then he tries to answer our doubts, Arjuna's doubts and questions, before even the question arises. So he gives a definition. My prakriti, that of which this is all made, from which it all arises, my prakriti is of eightfold composition: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intellect, and ego. You must understand that behind that, and distinct from it, is that which is the principle of consciousness in all beings, and the source of life in all. It sustains the universe. So he's saying, don't be distracted. If you're going to be that one, don't be distracted by the products of my prakriti. Know this, my prakriti, united with me, the womb of all beings. I am the birth of the cosmos, its dissolution also. I am he who causes no other besides me. Upon me the worlds are held like pearls strung on a thread. Sri Krishna is giving us reason for reverence. Reason to think, as he says in chapter 3 of the Gita, you think you are the doer, but you're not. I am the doer. I am he that produces all of this. But don't be deluded by the this. Don't be deluded. Think of that which is behind it. Know this, my prakriti, united with me, the womb of all beings. I am the birth of this cosmos, its dissolution also. I am he who causes, no other beside me. Upon me, the worlds are held like pearls strung on a thread. I am the essence of the waters, the shining of the sun and the moon, Om of all the Vedas, the word that is God. It is I who resound in the ether and am potent in man, by that he means human beings, the life force within you, the potency of you. That is Sri Krishna, he's saying. That is him. in the form of consciousness, in the form of pure consciousness. I am the sacred smell of the earth, the light of the fire, life of all lives, austerity of the ascetics. So shall an ascetic be proud of their austerities? How comical would that be? Sri Krishna is the austerity of the ascetic. We have humility in the face of all this. Oh Lord, you have given me some austerity. You have given me some renunciation. You have given me some separation from the delusion. Oh, blessed is the name of the Lord. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. The reason for reverence. The reason for reverence. Know me, eternal seed of everything that grows, the intelligence of those who understand, the vigor of the active. In the strong I am strength, unhindered by lust and the objects of craving. I am all that a man may desire without transgressing the law of his nature. Now, as he says elsewhere, it is by the Atman's experience that all this is validated. He said, I am all. I am all that a man may desire without transgressing the law of his nature. So as long as our desires remain within Dharma, there is no reason to question the desire. There's only the feeling that this is not my desire. This is the desire of the purpose of the Atman of Sri Krishna itself, himself. And so let me not be attached. It will arise, it will pass away. As Sri Krishna says, desire arises in the mind of the seer like a river passing into the ocean, it leaves no stain. So we needn't quarrel with ourselves. We needn't say, oh, I mustn't. No. Just look and see, is what I am doing and desiring within the realm and the law of Dharma? I am all. I am all that a human being may desire without transgressing the law of that person's nature. You must know that whatever belongs to the states of sattva, rajas, and tamas proceeds from me. Let me repeat that. Let it sink in for me, to me, and to all of us. This is the secret of I am not the doer. You must know that whatever belongs to the states of sattva, rajas, and tamas proceeds from me. They are contained in me, but I am not in them. The entire world is deluded by the moods and mental states which are the expression of these three gunas. That is why the world fails to recognize me as I really am. I stand apart from them all, supreme and deathless. So that which arises and passes away due to the mingling of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Since tattvamasi, thou art that. Thou art that. They are just something occurring in your presence. for your own purposes, not as a reflected ego, not as a personality, as the divine presence itself. And then Sri Krishna empathizes with us. This is such a sweet, sweet verse. How hard to break through is this, my Maya, made of the gunas. How hard to break through is this, my Maya, made of the gunas. And then he repeats what he says in the beginning. But he who takes refuge within me only shall pass beyond Maya, he and no other. So we can see that action, the karma of your bhakti karma cocktail, the action is simply the work of pure consciousness of the divine presence expressed through its prakriti and through its gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. These things are occurring in its presence. And thou art that. Thou art that presence. So, as we live our human lives, we say with great reverence, oh, my divine father, mother, what wonders you offer. Starting with this spacesuit itself. What a wonder. To take human birth is the first grace. Why? Because it allows you to translate what is otherwise unknowable into a finite knowing. It allows you to experience yourself. You, the infinite dreamer, are given this machine to dream the finite dream. And in so, say, ha ha ha, I see you peeking out from behind your gunas, O Lord. I see you peeking out from behind your gunas. So starting with this space and its capability of translating what is nothing but a vibration of consciousness, it is nothing but radiation, and yet this machine, this marvelous machine, makes it into what we're experiencing this very moment. Isn't that a reason to be your own best friend? To say to yourself, as you would say to your friend, what a marvelous being you are. What a marvelous being you are. Don't you have some wonderful attributes, some wonderful capabilities? Go express them, be them, do them. Keeping in mind always that all the doing and all the being is your finite form. You are not in that. It is within you, as Krishna says. So this is that incredible non-duality that the Master referred to when he said, take your virtue, take your vice, and give me pure love for thee. Take your righteousness, your unrighteousness. Take your duality and give me pure love for thee. when he's saying that, he's just recognizing the truth, that the duality is hers anyway and always was and always will be. We can cling to it all we like, and all we'll do is get our fingers burned, and the sand will run through our fingers. So let us celebrate ourselves, drinking our bhakti karma cocktail, drinking our bhakti karma cocktail, reveling in the name of the Lord and in his and her glory, reveling in the universe, which is the self made manifest, reveling in the self, and celebrating ourselves, each of us celebrating ourselves, and therefore celebrating one another. Ah, what a magnificent piece of work you are. How joyous to be in your presence. You've heard the story said from here of Thomas Merton standing in a street in Kentucky, and suddenly he had the vision of every human being radiating like the sun. He saw it, every human being radiating the truth of their being. You are the children of the light, Jesus said. You are the light. And he said, Thomas Merton said, what a glory it is to be a human being. And drink our bhakti karma cocktail. So now comes the best part. What is your reaction to all this? What has this given rise to you in you? Share with us your thoughts. This congregation is so sweet and generous with each other, sharing itself and its feelings, its thoughts, its doubts, its issues, its concerns. Where does this leave you at this very moment?
To me, is how we practice this one, and I think what, you know, because as long as we are in this relative world, all we have to do is every minute we have to say, okay, this is Dvaita, I want to put it aside. As long as you keep putting aside all the Dvaitic concepts, you will stay in that Advaitic concept. Yes.
Well, that's the Jnani's way. We've been talking about the Bhakta's way. Well, the Bhakta's way is to embrace the Dvaita and say, and give it back to Mother and say, give me pure love.
Yeah, but when you practice that way, automatically your mind starts to think everything is Brahman. That is Bhakta's way. Everything is love.
Well, I misunderstood what you meant then by setting aside.
Well, setting aside means at least to, while we are practicing.
Good. Thank you. Yes, Uma.
You know, to me, whichever way you look at it.
Speak up a little bit, would you please?
Whichever way you look at it, say for example, if you look at human body, technically or medically or from Vedant perspective, each thing which is called yoga in Bhagavad Gita is manifested throughout our own body.
Yes.
We are the superb manifestation. If you look at it from the perspective of jnana, we are capable. God has put that viveka shakti, discriminative power, which is jnana approach, which is within each one of us, if we practice. We are also capable of thinking, which is mind. We are capable of acting or practicing what we think, which is, I call it, hand. So it is the heart, which is bhakti. Heart, hand is action. Thinking power, the discriminating, discretion power behind the mind is jnana. So we are not only cocktail of bhakti and action, but all together a homogeneous work of creation or God. So to me, there are no artificial divisions. They are all working in harmony. Whichever way you are capable of, if you are strong in thinking power, you take this approach. If you are purely a bhakta, you know, it is not possible to say only one way. But it is a combination of all these discreetly used. Then we are approaching, coming closer to God.
Yes. As Vivekananda said, by work or worship or psychic control or philosophy, by one or more or all of these, be free.
And there cannot be a better model, I would say.
No, it's not possible to compartmentalize. You're right. There is it's a spectrum, and each one of us fits into that spectrum according to the bent of our own particular nature.
And we can be our own enemy also. The same thing can be used in a wrong way.
Oh yes. Oh well, yes. As we look around the world and see. The power that is given to us can be used in ways that are very puzzlingly destructive and competitive. And yes, dear.
I guess using the bhakti karma cocktail analogy, sometimes the gyan part can be the cherry or the lemon if the cocktail gets too flat. It kind of stirs it up, and I was feeling that because we are reading Gyan Yoga and the chapter on evolution, there were some fascinating portions of there that just, for me personally, made my bhakti part rise up.
Yes, very, very much so. Well, many of you know Shekhar Chandrasekhar. One night at a class, he was talking about one way of approaching this, one mental framework and so on. And somebody brought in some other information from another pathway. And he said, well, we have to be careful about jumping levels here. So we structure our own thinking according to the bent of our nature. But it isn't necessarily shareable directly with another. Another may be able to celebrate with us certain things that we do. and may share with us certain abilities or habits that are productive for us. But this is, if you go to the library and see how, just this tiny library here, and see how many books there are, so many ways of thinking about this and approaching it. So nothing that is said from here is ever meant to be dogma or something that must be adhered to. It's just a way of thinking about it. It's just a way of talking about it. And this is why I usually rely very heavily on Sri Krishna, on Jesus Christ, on Vasishta, on Shankaracharya, on Vivekananda, on Sri Ramakrishna, because they were knowers of Brahman. And so, we just try our best to understand what they're telling us. And this morning's was about the very evident combination of bhakti and karma that Sri Krishna was speaking about in that very first part of chapter 7 of the Gita. That was basically what this was all about. Anything else? This is delightful. Let's go on if you have something. Yes, Raj.
You mentioned saying something that all the three gunas comes from the Krishna or the manifests. And so how does they relate to the bhakti? Because I was just thinking, so does it mean that when you become devotional, you come over all those three gunas? Or how does it really, can you explain anything more?
The bhakta, as it's understood from here, the bhakta accepts and understands that everything that is and happens is a product of the Lord. It is the Lord's doing. And so the bhakta, having grasped this, is reverent and yielding, self-surrendering, so that you don't insist that, oh no, I'm doing this. No, the Lord is doing this. And I accept it worshipfully. And Sri Ramakrishna outlines what he calls the bhavas, the five bhavas, the way of being with this. The fact that the Lord is doing everything, so you can be with it in the contented mood, the shanta bhava, or you can be with it in the dasya bhava of a servant. He uses the illustration of a maid in a rich man's house, speaking of everything in that house as hers when she speaks, oh, it's my hari. Isn't this wonderful? These beautiful tapestries, aren't they? This is, and so on. But she knows in her heart of hearts that she is a person of her village, of her home. So that all of this talking about it as mine and so on is just a way of talking about it. This is the gunas are the things of the rich man's mansion. The gunas, the products of the gunas. And Krishna is just very clear. The prakriti is mine. The gunas that are the actions of prakriti are mine. And I'm doing all this. And so the bhakta is reverent and acts as best they can out of the most pure love, the most pure consciousness that they're capable of manifesting. And Sri Ramakrishna says, the way to achieve that purity is by chanting the name of the Lord, a bhakta's practice, that it will purify everything. And certainly, if you look at Swami Chandrasekharananda when he comes here, you will see, oh, how pure this man has become. If you look at Pravrajika Vidyaprana when she comes, how high her mind soars through this practice of chanting of the Lord's name. Sri Krishna says, just do this. Take refuge in me. Practice yoga and meditation. Yoga means union and detachment. The word means the two things. This is where Balakrishna was coming from. Yoga means not just union. It also means detachment. He was using the word setting aside or putting aside. Our hearts are capable of the highest. Each one of us sitting here is capable of being a knower of Brahman. And Sri Krishna gave us some instructions. The secret, of course, is that we're already a knower of Brahman because we are that. It's just that we get caught up in the things of the senses and therefore of the gunas. As Sri Krishna says in chapter 3, it's only the gunas attaching themselves to gunas. Don't be deceived. Yes, Dr. Mudge.
You know, one idea which helps me is to know that your statement that this is a wonderful body, this is the biggest donation God can even give you, etc., etc., etc. What helps me is the awareness that even this gift has a time frame. And the moment you get out of the time frame, that is where the deception begins. So you can say, okay, if not today, I'll do it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are given, hypothetically, that I'm giving you $10,000, tomorrow is July 1. On July 31, it will turn into a dirt. Then what would you do between July 1 and July 31? Mm-hmm. All of our
Beautiful illustration.
You see, those pullings will go away because you know that now it is July 2nd, now it is July 3rd, 4th. Even my interest in our celebration and eating on July 4th will go away because I'll be thinking about July 31 when my money will turn into dirt. So that to me is the best donation which God has given you. That if you come to think of that, perhaps singularly human beings can think of their death. Maybe the animals do too, but we have no perceptive way to know whether the animals know about their death. We have perceptive way, we know, we see it all the time. And yet, we fool around with the time, thinking that this is going to be forever. If someone says, I would agree, oh yeah, yeah, we are all going to die, don't worry, we are all going to die, but I'm not going to die. And that is the reason why we procrastinate until the nth point. And at that point also, give the example, when finally the doctor told the patient that this is your last moment, you are going to die. Do you have any wish? Okay, yes. I want to be seen by another doctor.
Yes.
But that is the very essence why we go astray. It's the very essence why the right guiding principle that okay, this helps him. It is biologically degradable quality that he has given.
Yes.
See, the brilliance with which you think today, tomorrow it may or may not be there. And therefore, right now is the best chance for me to execute it.
Right.
That's the way.
Yes. So, yes, be up and doing, as Vivekananda said. Arise, awake, stop not till the goal
exactly.
is reached. You know, but Sri Krishna says, you know, you can get too excited about this. You know, you can get too upset about it and get yourself all wound up. He said, nah, chapter 2 of the Gita, said, don't get too upset about it. You know, when you're through with this one, if you're not through with having these suits, you'll get another. Is that a reason to procrastinate? No. As Dr. Mudge said, you know, on July 31st, the money's going to turn to dirt. This will turn to dirt. No two ways about it. But we don't need to get ourselves too hyper about it. We just need to be steady and regular. Shtita Prajna.
Yes.
We need to be the Shtita Prajna. Just look in, is it chapter 5, where the definition of Shtita Prajna is.
Slow and steady.
Slow and steady wins the race, yes. And the thing that in that same chapter, Sri Krishna says, you know, you get steady and regular about this, I'll get behind it and make it happen. I'll make sure that you are one of the ones. The promises are there. You know, he doesn't stand up and blow horns and wave flags. He just quietly says these promises. And Sri Ramakrishna said it so sweetly and so simply and in so few words, practice just a little and someone will come forward to help you.
That is why in the health industry, the client is called patient.
As opposed to impatient.
Exactly. So same way, a devotee or a bhakta, if he is called patient, it will work a lot in his own favor.
Yes. Well, that's Swami Prabhavananda's second instruction for meditation. First instruction, the chosen ideal is you yourself, no different. Learn to feel that living presence. Second instruction, patience. Third instruction, perseverance. Fourth instruction, expectation. Yes, Paul.
I guess it's a metaphor of, you know, July 31st, my $1,000 turns to dirt.
$10,000.
$10,000. Well, accounting for inflation. I figure a dollar is a dime. Actually, buying power. But the part of, you know, shifting identity, I mean, that we are, to the extent that we are no longer completely identified with the finite form, that is the, you know, the mortal self, that dirt that we, you know, the identity shifts to the divine being.
Yes.
And that handful of dirt is being cashed in for $1 zillion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the perspective of non-dual.
Yep.
And yet, you know, as a...
Where moths cannot destroy, nor rust break through.
But to the extent I, you know, I am identified with the, you know, the $10,000 that I have until the end of July, which is probably, you know, I want to get busy spending it.
Yes. wisely and well.
Not go to Las Vegas and spend it on...
It's your choice.
But then a bhakta will say that on July 31, when it turns to dirt, I will call it a divine dirt.
Yes. And I'll throw it in the Ganges along with the rupee.
There you go.
It will definitely be divine dirt.
Yes. At the end of your talk, you mentioned that the human being is glorious. At the end of your talk, you mentioned that how glorious is the human being.
Yes.
So, can you just explain more on that? Because I just feel that like everything is like, say, whatever animals, plants, everything is glorious on its own way. Because, say, like a bird can... human being has a brain on the mind. So similarly, like every animal, say like a bird can fly to any distance, or a snake can identify some things, and at night some animals have the vision and other things. So what is so glorious about the human being? And it's all told by like human beings himself telling that yes, human beings are glorious. So
I see here before me no snakes, no rabbits, no cats. I see human beings who have come here to hear how to transcend their limitations, their upadis. We are told, and I won't assert it of my own knowledge, but we're told by the Swamis, we're told by the scientists, who look at truth from a different perspective, that human beings are the only ones who can think about themselves this way. That can think about the nature of reality in this way. And if we ask ourselves, would I prefer to have the form that is sitting here this morning, or would I prefer to be a horse? Or an elephant, or an alligator. No, I think we'd all say, I'm happy, I'm good. Yes, everything, as Vivekananda said, where shall we go to find God if not in our own hearts and in every living being? Every living being is shining like the sun if your vision is tuned to that. But I was quoting Thomas Merton, because Merton, this saintly Catholic monk, had that experience of seeing human beings in that way. And many other wise people have also said this. And this is why Sri Ramakrishna says, worship and serve Jiva, the individual human being, as Shiva, because they are host to that. Now, yes, the cat is also host to that. Mother said, don't beat that cat. I am in that cat. So the more broadly we see the truth, the more we will both be humble in the face of that truth, but we will also glory in our ability to see that truth and speak that truth and hear that truth. Thanks for that question. Good question. Anyone else?
Sandra.
Yes, Raj.
When you talk about the glory of the human beings, I think that one of the things that comes to my mind is that we have ability to realize self in self, in the sort of, if you really practice, you can realize the self-realization as something we can call it, Atman. At the same time, I think the real distinction in my mind comes between other living beings and us is we have ability to make choices in our life. How, what I want to do, how I want to live. Whereas other living beings cannot make real choices in their life, how do they want to live their life. Or even, we have a choice to, as we say, that we have ability to become a Brahman or the equal to God, whereas they don't have that choice even. I mean, it's an evolution to me that we reach this stage and that's how we feel that we are glorified, because I have ability to make choice whether I want to live in this place, I want to live in another place, I want to practice this, I want to not to practice this, I want to think this way, I want to really evolve myself. So all choices is given, that ability to us makes so distinct from other living beings.
Yes. And we are the only ones capable of deceiving ourselves about who we truly are. The others, it never occurs to them, apparently. Yes, Uma.
I was thinking about the same time, same line, that the analytical thinking, thinking of discriminating between good and bad, moral thinking, analytical thinking, philosophical thinking, all these abilities are given to, I think, and the entire world, only humans are capable of this. It's not that any suburbs do not, but they are more instinctual in their acting.
Yeah.
They think from, like, hand to mouth, where do I get my seeds? Let me fly to another place where there is some food available there. Mm-hmm. But what we call long-term thinking, they are not capable of. That what will be the consequence of this action which I am taking right now. So they cannot project into future, which they are only capable of acting on.
Yes, it's a marvelous capability for us to be able to deceive ourselves by projecting into the future. Really, it is. It is one of our most amazing capabilities that we can think that for one moment that we can imagine what's going to happen in the next moment. But we certainly do, and we make all kinds of plans. You know, man proposes, God disposes.
I think I have one comment that it doesn't mean that we do not reverence other life. The reason is I feel that they all interconnected with us. Without that other life here, we cannot survive even ourselves.
Well, that's what Vivekananda was pointing to when he said, where shall we go to find God, if not in our own hearts and in every living being? Every living being is... He even goes so far as to say the worm, the amoeba, it's all consciousness made manifest. That's all it is. It's just a form of consciousness. And so if we are to be sincere, we will be reverent and we will be mournful if we have to take the life of another creature, even one that's inimical to us.
I will not qualify this glorification of human beings. I think we are much evolved than other plants or birds or animals.
Yes.
That's how we claim status, highly glorified. It's true that human beings are much more evolved compared to others. Say, if I'm trying to fall, if somebody gives me a stick, I will immediately grab the stick. Whereas if my plant is growing, my God, it's going to fall off. So I put a stick next to it. I see the next day it grabs. So it has some kind of thinking power, something in it.
It knows what's best for it, yes. It knows what's best for it. We often are so self-deceptive that we don't know what's best for ourselves. We're capable of being, you know, of there being a stick put up beside us and ignoring it. Mm-hmm. This is what Sri Ramakrishna laments. He says, you come here, and then you go away. What has happened? Mm-hmm. Everything was possible. Everything was on offer. And yet, as Brahmananda put it, what you came for was eggplants, potatoes, and onions. So this is why Sri Krishna says, take refuge in me. Not in eggplants, potatoes, and onions. Take refuge in me. Wholeheartedly. And his promises, then I'll just make it all possible for you. That's what you need to do. You just need to take refuge. And he doesn't mean in him, Krishna, that personality. He means in the divine essence, the divine presence. Sure, it can be Krishna, that personality. It can also be Sri Ramakrishna, or it can be Jesus. It can be Buddha. It can be anywhere. As Swami Vivekananda said, the true test of whether religions are true or not is whether they produce saints. And so each one of the great teachers following their teachings produces saints. So yes, we have the capacity to both reach out for that stick, and we also have the ability to ignore it. It's our choice. Or it seems to be our choice. As Swami Ranganathananda points out on page 18 of Divine Grace, you just thought it was you. You just thought it was you manifesting yourself. Krishna taps you on the shoulder and says, see, it was me all along. But by that time, you're ready to receive it. You're ready to hear that. Before you'd have gone, what do you mean? I was the one who... Okay. Sri Krishna will retire back into the shadows. Have it your way. Now, since Elizabeth Yates, our beloved Jyoti, was not here this morning, she's doing a yoga teacher training. I don't exactly know what that table is going to look like when we get in there, but I'm sure that there will be something wonderful. This has been wonderful. And if there's nothing more, I'll close with our regular chant, which is always a wonderful way to invoke the peace that is required for us to make spiritual progress. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
Let there be peace in the herbs,
the
plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May
the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
May the whole universe be
pervaded by peace. Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. So Jai Shri Ramakrishna Jai Ma.